And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's in the past is in the past, man. I mean, we can't change anything now. It's about this next game and going out there with the purpose and details and just competing for 60 minutes or whatever it takes. And, you know, we just got to put our balls on the line and go for it.
Well, James, we're back.
Game seven.
Apparently.
All the marbles.
I mean, this is not really that unexpected. If you had told anyone before the series that Leafs Lightning is going to go to seven, they'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. That seemed like, honestly, the likeliest scenario, right?
And I think that the way that it's played out, I think the series deserves game seven as well.
Yeah, so you wrote a story on The Athletic today, and you mentioned how close the series has been, and that's why there not needs to be a game seven, but why game seven isn't the wrong outcome for the way the series has played out.
Yeah, and I know that fans are upset with like some individual things that have happened in the series, including in game six, like penalty calls and stuff like that. But, you know, the Leafs are... I thought our friend Chris Johnson had a good column where he kind of said the Leafs just are really just not engaging with that and just moving past it and not trying not to get caught up in what could have been or whatever. And it's the right mindset. I mean, the teams that go far in the playoffs, they don't spend all the time talking about, well, this could have went this way and this could have went that way. And there's just no point. I mean, that gets you nothing. So, and this is a just outcome. You know, you look how close the series is. I mean, the reality is that if you want to beat teams like Tampa, you have to beat them by the thin margins that a game seven provides. You need to win those games.
Well, and I'm probably in the minority, but they didn't lose the game because of officiating. They didn't.
Well, there's going to be some people listening that think that. I mean, a 5-on-3 in the third period obviously is difficult to overcome, and you're likely going to allow a goal there. But there were a lot of other mistakes the Leafs made that contributed to losing that weren't just the 5-on-3.
Well, you can't give them two goals. You just can't. It's like you're playing like a really, really good team. Like if you make two errors like that, two glaring errors where you give them the puck and they go and score, that's killer. Like you get down 2-0, then you have to fight your way back. Like that alone, like forget about the penalties on the 5-on-3. And like the penalties on the 5-on-3, the first one, yes, on replay, it's not a penalty. But in real time, like they don't get to see replays. Like that's just not the way it goes. And in real time, it looks like a penalty. And then Kerfoot on the second one, you gotta love like how aggressive he is, and he's not scared and all that stuff. But like he gets his stick up. Like I don't know, what do you want?
Well, fans are saying that Hedman lifts his stick up and that it hits him in the face. But I think that
Kerfoot's also right in there.
there's also some when his Hedman lifts the stick up and then Kerfoot goes towards him, and then, you know, like there's there's only one player's actions that are taking place there.
Well, and he's got to be careful in that situation. Like, you can't, you understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to waste some time, and he was doing pretty good until that moment. I just don't think the reason they lost the game is the officiating. I know, I understand if fans disagree. Like, I get it. If I was a fan, I'd probably be upset with some of the calls, the non-calls.
Well, yeah, I think some of the things that they weren't calling late in the game were more glaring. Like, the Leafs deserved, the tough thing is, like, overtime, it was pretty clear they weren't going to call anything. Like, there were some plays there that I think that could have been penalties, but
I guess what I would be unhappy with, James, if I was a Leaf fan or a Leaf player or a Leaf coach, management, whoever, is that it did feel like the way the game was being officiated changed in that game. And now the issue is the refs can't win. Like, I kind of feel consistently the same for the officiating crews. Is like, people will say in a game like that, if they call it as they had been calling it, well, they're getting in the way, they're ruining the game. And then when they don't call anything, well, now you're changing, now you're letting things go. Like, I just don't know how you want them to officiate these games. What do you want them to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you want them to do is be consistent and not change in game six from what's happened in the rest of the series.
Fair. Which it seemed like they did.
I think that's probably the most pertinent complaint, is that why was the standard different in that game versus the other games? Because it sure felt like it was.
Saying all that, they played a really good game. Like, you can't, aside from those mistakes that I point out, and again, like, mistakes in a really close game hurt you, obviously. But I think they played really well. I thought they came out really well. They didn't look scared. They didn't look tentative. They were aggressive. They didn't generate a ton in the first period, but neither did Tampa. Like, what did you think of the way that they came out in that game, just given the history of their play in games like that in the past?
I thought they played well in the game overall. You know, the start was fine. I thought both teams were kind of like very, it kind of felt a little bit like a game seven. Both teams were very kind of like defensive. There weren't a lot of chances in that first period. That's why the Kerfoot mistake stands out so much, because
yes,
there was just nothing. Like, that should have been a 0-0 period. No one gave up anything. No one, you basically just gave them a free goal in, you know, I thought the Leafs played well. I mean, the Leafs were the better team in the second period, you know, not just the goals coming back, but even when it looked like they were going to go to the third period down 2-1, it's like, well, they're playing great. Like, it felt like they were going to break through. And then all of a sudden, bang, bang, they get those two goals right at the end of the second period. And it's like, okay. But, you know, for me, I mean, you and I were talking after the game and kind of disagreeing a little bit. I thought they sat back a little bit too much in the third period.
And my counter to you is, there's another team that's always going to be pushing when they're down in a third period of an elimination game. Yeah, like, that's just what happens. They're a pretty good team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's third period. They're down 3-2 in the game and in the series. They're going to push, and then you give them a 5-on-3, and they're going to, like, that's a really good power play.
The Leafs just stopped generating, though, right? Like, they really only had a lot of offense in the one period in the game. Like, if you look at, like, scoring chances, and they didn't have a lot in the first. Now, I'm not saying they were bad. I'm just saying they didn't have a lot. Like, they weren't testing Vasilevsky enough. So, obviously, they're playing a fantastic team. Tampa is so good. You know, my respect is renewed for the talent on that team. And some of the guys that, you know, probably didn't get talked about enough on the cup runs, like Cirelli and Chernak, and, you know, some of their support pieces are fantastic players, and they've stepped up big for them in this series. And I thought the Leafs could have pushed back more in the third and tested them a little bit more. You know, it was kind of like they were going to win the game 3-2, or it was going to go to overtime. That's the way the Leafs played that period.
So I think you're right for the back half of the period. Like, in my notes, I wrote that it felt like they were on their heels for the back half, but, like, there were some shifts. Like, I thought Tavares, Nylander, and Kerfoot, there was one shift, I think, with like 6 minutes left, where they were humming, and they had like three or four really good looks. But yeah, like, that was less frequent than it had been. I think the Matthews line was outstanding, and I think it was mostly just Matthews. He was just a man on a mission. I did not think Mitch Marner had a great game. Bunting still looks like he's not himself all the way, but Matthews just like carried the play.
I think you said on another podcast that Bunting doesn't really have his skating burst the way that it was during the season. So, you know, good on him for playing through it, but I think it, I don't know. It they were doing some of it. They were mixing the line, that lineup a little bit. I don't know. It might almost even make sense to play him a lot less on that line. And get, the good thing about the, about having him there is that it sure makes your other lines look better.
Well, you know what I love that they did in game six is they mixed Nylander in with Matthews and Marner a whole bunch. And obviously it led to the Matthews goal that made it 2-1. That was an offensive zone faceoff where Nylander came out with Matthews and Marner. And that line, when they got together, they were like rocking because Nylander has just really elevated his play. And I'm looking at the stats. So they played 246 together. Matthews, Marner, Nylander. Shot attempts were 7-0. Shots were 3-0. Goals were 1-0. And expected goals were 100%.
Nylander was excellent. Small
sample size. Yeah, Nylander was great.
He was excellent in game five too. You know, and just really engaged, really smart, all over the puck And like obviously the skills there too. He played 22 minutes. The Leafs overall played a pretty good game. That was another very, very even game. All I'm saying is that you make one brutal mistake in the first. You're very unaggressive in the third.
Well, don't forget the brutal mistake in the second. I mean, that's just the...
Is that Mikheyev?
Yeah, makes a soft pass to Bunting that's picked off. But
yeah, it was. If you, I don't know. I watched the replay on that one a couple of times. It's like, how did he get that? Like, it's not like it was like the worst play in the world. Like,
it was just too soft a pass. Like, he just didn't get enough on it.
Yeah, maybe I need to watch the replay again. But like, it sure felt like a pretty good like zone entry play to me. But I mean, obviously, if you get picked off, it's not. I kind of tip my hat to Cirelli for getting that one.
Great player. But so I think that's the other thing here. You've kind of hinted at it. Their stars have been excellent these last few games. And that's a really big, significant difference from previous situations that they've been in where these game sevens. Like Matthews has been the best player in the series. So I'm going to read you his game six line. He plays 28-19. 6 shots on 10 attempts, 9 hits, 2 takeaways, 19 for 29 in the draw. And obviously he scores their first goal. And he was at like 79% expected goals.
Matthews played more than Morgan Rielly.
Yeah, you know who played the most in game six?
Well, I have it in front of me. So it's...
Okay,
it's,
so you know. So do you want to tell?
It's actually TJ Brody, but it's only...
Actually not.
Oh, who am I missing?
Jake Muzzin played 30-15. Which is like a little bit like they're going to have to really make sure he gets a good rest today because now you've got game seven 2 days later.
That's interesting. I didn't notice that he was out there that much.
Yeah, so Muzzin plays 30-15. Brody plays 28-51. Rielly plays 28-14. Matthews 28-19. Marner 28-04 are some of the big numbers.
Muzzin looked pretty good, I thought. You know, he was moving the puck well. And
the other guy, we've talked about him earlier in the series. We talked about him after game five, is Tavares. Like, that's what they need. Like, I'm not confident that he's going to be able to kind of win the territorial battle.
Well, he
in
did
his
not.
Matchup.
He did not. He did not. In game six. They need him to be opportunistic, right?
Like, exactly it, James. That's the word.
He lost a lot of faceoffs. He got beaten on possession and scoring chance share. But when there were openings, he took advantage.
And that's what they need from him because like he can score. And like those were his first two 5-on-5 goals of the series. He was really good, obviously, in game five. And so like you look right now, it's like Matthews is going, Nylander's going, Tavares is going. Marner slowed down a little bit the last couple games, but we'll see what he can bring in game seven. So I think there's reason to feel that this is different, but again, like they're playing a really good team and game sevens are game sevens.
No one's going to say that it's different though. If they don't show up in game seven, like a lot of people are saying, I've seen some people write that and say that today that, you know, this Leafs team is different. And it's like, they are until they aren't. right? Like, this team is only different. I don't know. I'm okay with writing that if they play really well in game seven and lose. And it's like, yeah, okay, they played really well all the way through. They played an amazing team and it was really close. And it just, but if they no-show in game seven, they're not different.
No, that's fair.
I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying if that, I was guilty of this mistake against in the Montreal series. You know, they went up 3-1. It didn't look close. And it's like, all right, they're finally going to advance. And it's because this team's a lot better than the ones they've had before. And then they did it again.
Well, but so that's where this is already different is they've responded to situations. Like, but again, it doesn't like you're totally right. If it doesn't happen again in game seven, it doesn't matter and it'll be judged all the same. But
no one's going to remember how good John Tavares was in game five. In 2 years, if they lose this series,
no one will remember. Yeah.
And the other thing, too, Jonas, is this team will just get completely, it will just be associated with all the other teams. Like, how much can we, you and I know, because like we're there all the time, but like the history is starting to blend together. Like, separating the two Bruins series from each other, it sometimes can get like, sometimes you forget which Kadri suspension was in which playoff year and which bad goal did Anderson allow in which game seven and et cetera, et cetera. Like, some of that stuff starting to blend together. And for the fan base, it's like, they all just failed. That's all that it is. It's a big pile of fail.
Yeah. Loss is a loss of loss, right? It doesn't matter in the end. And like, this is a really good team. Like what I was telling you this morning, like if they can get past Tampa, I think they're the favorite to come out of the East. Like, this is going to be, I would think, the, aside from if you make the cup final, maybe you play Colorado, but this could be the best team they face if they can get past Tampa. Like, suddenly the path is there for them to go on a run. And like, that's what I sometimes think gets lost a little bit when we focus so much on, they just need to win a round. No. They need, like, the round is only like the first step. Like, that's only the beginning of the journey. Like, you're not trying to win a round. Like, the Leafs didn't come to the season saying, oh, we just got to win a round. No, they're trying to win a cup.
Don't you get the sense that if they win a round, that there's going to be like one of the things, I know this is hypothetical, but like if the Leafs win a round, one of the things the organization is going to have to guard against is like, no, we got to keep going.
Yes. The goal is not to win the first round. It's just not. And I remember, James, like, I don't know why this kind of hits the same way, but I remember like in the beginning of this little era that they have, where it was like, oh, they just got to make the playoffs. It's like, no. Like, the goal is not to make the playoffs. The goal is to
in that, like, first year it was to make the playoffs, right? Like, no one thought they were going to make the playoffs in 2017.
It just became Anyway, it's fairly self-obvious. It just seems to be, it gets lost a little bit that this is not about the first round. It's just become about the first round because they haven't won.
I think, though, that like in that second Boston series, no one was like saying that, oh, they made the playoffs. Like, no one gave a shit. Like, it didn't matter.
Yeah, but in the beginning, that's what it was. Like, that, like, now it's just not taken for granted, but it's just like, they got 113 points. Great. Like, at some point, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to eventually win, and like, you have to eventually beat a good team. So you can say, well, it sucks they're playing Tampa in the first round, the standings are not fair and all that stuff. But like, eventually, if you're going to win a cup, you're going to have to beat multiple good teams.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. And this is a good team. Like, that's the thing. Yeah.
I think you're right about the East, though. I think Tampa is better than their regular season record showed. I don't think, you know, Kucherov missed a lot of the season. And like, they were a little bit in autopilot through, I mean, they played so much hockey. But I would pick, after watching the series, I would pick Tampa over Florida or Boston or Carolina or Pittsburgh or whoever else comes out in the East.
Yes. So
as long as they don't run out of gas. But yeah, the Leafs could even get Washington in the second round. Like, that series isn't over.
But that's another team that they would, I would think, be favored to beat.
That's my point, though, is that like, there could be a pretty easy lane open for them. I mean, like, if imagine it plays out that they, you know, second round would be Washington and third round will be the Rangers or something like that.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Anything else from Game 7 you want to, or Game 7, Game 6 you want to break down?
I don't know what happened in Game 7 yet, Jonas.
Yeah, sorry. I know. Well, you do. You have like, you just don't want to tell anyone. You've seen the future.
One of the things I had in my column today was I was talking about how few Leafs have had a poor series. Is there anyone that stands out to you as not having had a great series? Like, I think Kerfoot is quickly putting his name on that list with kind of some of the mistakes he made. And you watch him though, and he's playing well. Like, he's playing hard, and like, Kerfoot had a lot of offense during the regular season, and he's had a lot of opportunities and hasn't been able to convert.
All right. Well, I'm going to go through last night's roster. Muzzin's had a good series. Matthews has had a good series. Riley's like, it's been a struggle for him and Lyubushkin. I don't know how much I put that on Riley as much as I put on Lyubushkin and some of the lines that they're
Riley's
playing
been
with.
Fine. Like, I haven't really noticed him make big mistakes or anything like that defensively.
Agreed. Brody's been really good. Marner's been good. Giordano's been good. Bunting's been hobbled by the injury or the recovery from the injury or whatever. Tavares has come on. He's now up to 6 points in six games. Justin Hall obviously had the misfire in game four, but it's hard to really complain with this series. Lyubushkin, I think, has struggled. Kerfoot, you mentioned. Nylander's had a good series. Engvall's had a good series. Kampf has had a great series. Mikheyev's had a pretty good series. I've liked Blackwell. I like his energy.
The numbers on Blackwell are bad.
Are awful, but I don't think that...
Part of that is just like playing with Clifford and...
Yeah. Well, so, and Kasha's been okay. And Spezza's given them something. Like, and then the guys who haven't played well are basically out of the lineup, like Clifford, Simmons, Liljegren.
The thing to keep in mind, yeah.
And Campbell, sorry.
There's not a very long list of players that have underperformed. I mean, that list might get a little bit longer after game seven. We'll see. But I just thought
it'll get shorter, James. You try to see the other side too.
Yeah. But it's in previous series, when you got to the end of the series, game six or game seven, there was a long list of people that hadn't performed well and that had put them in that position. It's not the case. You know, this team's played up to its potential.
Yes. And that is why Leaf fans should have hope heading into game seven. Like, they played really well. And one thing, James, that I think is sort of interesting heading into game seven, Leafs obviously have home ice. Suddenly the Matthews-Cirelli matchup has just gone away because Matthews has just kind of destroyed who's ever he's against. And yeah, like in game seven with home ice, they can kind of pick apart who they want him to play against. So that's an advantage. And playing at home in front of a full crowd on a Saturday night, like, it's not a weeknight. It should be rocking. I think it'll probably be nervous energy to start. But if they can get off to a good start and get the crowd into it.
You probably didn't see it, but the panel, the Hockey Night Canada panel after the game, it was, you know, Kevin Bieksa and Kelly Rudy and our friend Elliot. And, you know, and I believe it was Kelly Rudy that made a good point after the game. And he's like, you know, the Leafs just, they've played really well. They deserve to be where they are. It's just, are they going to be like nervous? And are they going to kind of like, I don't have the quote right in front of me, but, you know, are they going to shrink from the moment? Or are they going to be able to like deliver on the team that they are? And that's really the question in the minds of, I think, a lot of the neutral parties that don't watch the Leafs every day. Like, that's the reputation that they built for themselves. They've earned that reputation of not being able to do that. So the question is, do they show up and do they play well in game seven? I mean, you can say all that about the crowd, but you know how it goes though in some of these games in the past where there's a crowd and they play poorly and the crowd gets taken out of the game and it's almost like a factor against you.
Well, dude, go back to game five. That's how it started. And then something changed and they elevated and their stars basically performed.
Well, and then the crowd was going bananas, right? So, you know, the Leafs should really try and come out a little bit, I think a little bit more aggressively, like not dumb, but just like push the pace.
Well, if their best guys are going to play like that, that's what they need. Like, sometimes it's just simple to me. Like, I don't know. I'm big on like stars performing. If your stars are stars, which is why you have them, like look at Tampa during those last two cup runs. Like, everybody focuses rightly on Gord, Coleman, Goudreau, But go look at the stats. Like, it was Kucherov and Point and Stamkos. You know what I mean?
Hedman.
Like, Vasilevsky was a monster. Yeah, like, Vasilevsky, their stars were stars, and they win. Like, that's the way this team is built. And if Tavares is going to be opportunistic and Nylander's going to play like this and Matthew, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you need.
Well, I mean, if Matthews is going to play 28 minutes, I mean, I know there's like some overtime in there and whatever, but like, that's... And remember, we were talking about how he had 7 hits in the game 5. He had 9 hits in game 6. So yeah, maybe he'll have 20 hits in game 7.
12 hits. Let's see where that ranks. I'm just curious in the NHL in this playoffs.
Well, you're looking at the most hits in a game?
No, just in this. Wow. James, how about this? So far in the playoffs, Matthews ranks 10th. In the NHL on hits, like all players, defensemen. He has one more hit than Labushkin. That's surprising, sort of.
Matthews has had a really, really good series.
Yes.
I tweeted that at one point during the game that the first line's been great, and someone was like, well, they only have 1 point. It's like, you're not watching the game. Like, I don't care how many points they have.
And it really was all him, James. Like, he was like, yeah, every time they lost the puck, he was like aggressive and hunting it back.
Marner was okay. You and I were talking about Marner after the game. It's like, he was okay. He didn't look like kind of like the skittish Marner that struggled against Montreal in the big moments, but he also didn't look like he was about to take over the game.
He looked like a touch hesitant. Like, there was one shift where he had a couple opportunities to shoot and didn't. And then I noticed on the bench, he went and he was looking at the iPad, and Spezza came over and it looked like just kind of gave him a word of encouragement.
Did you see that Spezza at one point talked to Tavares early in the game? And
no, I did not see that.
They showed that on TV a couple of times, and it really looked like Tavares was just like getting like too caught up in the moment in like a negative way, and Spezza was really talking to him and being like trying to get him to like come back to the moment and like, you know, say what just happened doesn't matter. What happens next is what matters.
So do you think it was kind of like that Jonathan Toews, Brent Seabrook thing a little bit? Remember that?
Yeah. Was that after he took a penalty or something?
Yeah. He was in the box and like he was losing his shit. And, and Seabrook came over and was just like, dude, all good.
Toews came over. Yeah.
No. Toews was in the box. It was the other way around.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that does. Yeah, I do remember. I like that. That's a good throwback. Like, what year is that? 2015?
That's early. It might have been even earlier in the run. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
If you should go look at the video, and then Colin Blackwell sitting there beside Tavares, and Spezza's clearly saying something that's like, I don't know what he said, but the look on Blackwell's face is like, that's interesting.
Well, you would not get this, but maybe you get this, but so there's the Miami Heat have this guy, Udonis Haslem, who is basically, I think he's like, he might be 40. He's old and he barely plays and he's been on the team like forever. Like he's been on the team since like, he's probably been on the team like 15, 20 years. He's 41. And basically he never plays. Like he played 13 games during the regular season, but he's almost like coach player. Like he kind of melds the two. Like he doesn't play a lot, but he's just like a really kind of veteran influence. You'll see him in like huddles. He's talking to the guys. He's like a badass. Like he's not, he can kind of get in guys' faces. He's like 6'8", 235. And it just kind of feels the same to me with Spezza. Like he's just kind of, he's not playing a lot, but he's just kind of a guy who's around and on the bench and like is playing maybe a bigger role in some ways than the minutes or the numbers or anything would indicate. And that's why getting him back in the lineup was such a big deal.
We were talking earlier in this series on one of the podcasts about like, is Spezza going to be back next year, et cetera, et cetera. And like, I think coming into the series, he didn't really end the season that strongly, but watching the series is like, yeah, bring him back. Even if he's only playing 5 or 6 minutes a game, even if he's your 13th forward and he's just like a healthy scratch and whatever, like he's like a player coach. Like the fact that he can go, he's going up to like the best players on the team. He's going up to Campbell and like putting him in a better headspace and Tavares. And like, he's like having Greg Harden on the bench beside the guys.
Yeah.
So whatever. I mean, if he wants to come back for a league minimum and play 6 minutes a game and like do what he's doing, like it feels invaluable to do that. Especially for this team where their hurdle is not a talent hurdle.
All right, that's all I've got on the schedule for my topics. Jack Campbell, I thought, played pretty well again. He's kind of kept it. I think he's outplayed Vasilevskiy for the series, so that's something. But again, it's like how he's going to respond in Game 7 is
He was better in Game 5. That's not to say he was bad in Game 6, but Game 5, he was, like, some of the saves he made were amazing. I think Vasilevskiy was better in Game 6. That would be my read on that. There were some plays like Raid and Alone and Vasilevskiy, just like, he's just unflappable and he's so big. Like, there was the one that I think Kerfoot had, like, in tight on him, and he gets it like
two,
with like his
two or three whacks at it.
He gets it like with his arm or something, and
yeah, he is huge. 6'3", 225.
You can just see it in the net. Like, he was like down, but he's still taking up like so much of the net. Campbell's like sort of an average sized guy.
Campbell is 6. Wow, Campbell's bigger than you think. Campbell's 6'3", 207. So he's not as thick, but he's just as tall.
Maybe he's beefed up a little bit from a couple of years ago. All those ribeyes.
Yeah. Let's take a break and let's get into the pod bag.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, James, a reminder to eat at your local restaurants, grab some takeout, relax. I did get my pizza. It was delicious.
I am loving this weather, Jones. My goodness. Yesterday in Toronto, it was like 25 degrees. I was sitting on my back deck. I had a steak. My kids were playing in the backyard. I was like, thank the Lord. It is like this. Those are the good days.
I'm still in Tampa as we record this. It's like kind of stormy. It looks like it's going to be a storm, a lightning storm maybe.
Yesterday was the nicest day of the year in Toronto. It was unbelievable. I had to put the air conditioning on in the house and had shorts on, and it was good stuff. All right. I got to tell you, Jonas, a lot of the questions are about the officiating, so I don't know how much we want to get into that again, but you know, people are saying that the officials are vindictive and, you know, stuff like, I don't know.
You can go the other way. Was the Nick Paul really a dive? Doesn't look like a dive to me. So like, I don't know. You know my feelings on this.
So I'm going to skip through some of those officiating questions.
People, you can be mad. It's fine. Like, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I'm not with it.
Sutherland was one of the referees last night, right?
Yes. Kelly Sutherland, Justin St. Pierre.
I remember
Jake.
I don't know the guy at all, but like, I remember when I was a kid, we had season tickets in the WHL, Canvas Blazers, and I went to every single game with my dad. It would be like middle of February, minus 20. We'd be at the game. We had great seats. 6,000 seat arena full every single night back then in like the early mid 90s. Kelly Sutherland was an official in the WHL, and my dad hated him. He hated him. And back then, the officials used to wear their names on the back of their jerseys.
And oh, God.
Like, I've never seen my dad do this, but he was just like, oh, Sutherland, you're the, you know, and like the officials would get like these reputations. And I don't know how old Sutherland would have been back then. I mean, this is like, it's almost 30 years ago, but I just can't ever forget my dad yelling about calls that Sutherland would make. So, and I'm not saying that I noticed him missing calls or making calls or anything in this series. It's just like 12-year-old me has that image burned into my, or 14 or however old I was. I just cannot forget that's what I always associate Kelly Sutherland with.
Do you know what the one of the questions on Google is when you look up Kelly Sutherland? How old is Kelly Sutherland?
How old is he?
Wikipedia says he's 51.
Yeah, so he would have been like in his 20s when he was officiating in the WHL. And I didn't notice that he was worse than the other refs, but my dad was convinced he was just the worst ref on earth.
Have you, by the way, like sort of related, have you seen that there's like a problem? I don't know if it's in Canada as well as I know it's in the States, that they're having problems getting officials in a lot of these sports because of the harassment that refs are taking, like just in like youth leagues from parents and that people aren't signing up. And
why would, I mean, you know, I play beer league hockey when I'm not injured, which hasn't been that often lately, but the abuse that those officials get in the beer leagues in Toronto is, people should be so embarrassed by it. You know, the league should really stand up for the officials and throw people. I cannot believe the way that, and it's not just the other teams, as you know, I see it with guys on my team as well. It's like, I cannot believe the way that they treat the officials. And, you know, my kids aren't old enough to play competitive sports yet, but, you know, in the, you know, people say with like the 9, 10, you know, my friends who have kids that are playing like that level of hockey, they say the parents, like the abuse that they, and in that instance, like in beer league, the officials are grown men. And usually they're like, you know, we got like some of these like hardened older guys that just give it right back to you if you go at them. But some of the things I see people say to officials, I just cannot believe it, Jonas. Like, it's just beyond the pale. It's ridiculous.
If you're a parent at a game, you should just not say anything.
There should just be zero tolerance for abusing officials. There really should. And it goes for parents, you know, players in beer leagues and stuff. And because it's just like name calling, and just like, it's, the culture in hockey still has a way to go. And it's not just the NHL. It's all the way down. I mean, I don't think I would want my kids to officiate hockey. I mean, it's, you get paid almost nothing.
Some parent like harassing you? No way.
Some of my friends officiated really competitively back when I was in college in BC, and they officiated Junior B and Junior A, and a lot of times they would be linesmen, but it's a hard go. Like, you don't make hardly any money. You're traveling all the time. The road to make it up is difficult. Like, those, you know, those guys work hard, and it's difficult. And it's been interesting, you know, the NHL has been looking to retired players to come in as officials. JST, who used to write for us at The Athletic, is now an official and has officiated his first games in the NHL this year, which is kind of cool. And I don't know, maybe there'll be more of a respect factor or something if it's like former players that are there as officials.
Yeah, I think we can do a better job, like in how we cover it and how we talk about officials. Like, I don't know. I think.
Well, I've always,
I don't think a lot of it is very fair to these guys. Like, it's a really hard job.
I've always been kind of benefit of the doubt. Kind of, I think there's just way too much talk about how incompetent the officials are. I think the things that matter more to me is the standard that the league sets and tries to get the officials to adhere to. Because in defense of the individual refs, often the league is not saying to call these things. So you're mad that they're letting hooking and holding all this stuff go, but the league is not enforcing that. And they work for the league. So if you're an official and you're trying to do well for your officiating supervisor, I'm not even sure off the top of my head who it is this season, they're reviewing the tapes and they're looking for you doing certain things. You have to do what they want you to do. It's like anyone else that has a boss. So I put the onus on the league to fix officiating and to call more things. And in their defense, this season, you know, everyone complains about the hooking calls where the stick gets up in the hands. It's like, that's a good thing to call, because otherwise everyone's going to be doing it. And you can't make a play if you got someone hooking your hands.
Well, and you don't want your stars to be having that happen to them. Like, look at all the times throughout this regular season. Like, I was critical myself of some of the missed calls on Matthews that just seemed to go missed because, I think because he's so big, because he's so strong, because he's so fast at certain points.
He keeps playing through him, right? Like, he doesn't.
He keeps playing. But I think one thing we always forget, myself included, is how fucking fast it is. And I used to get to watch the games. I don't know if you remember, like, I used to get to watch when I did the radio beside the glass. And one thing that you cannot understand until, like, you've watched it from that level, like 100 level or even close up, is how fast everything goes and how much slower it looks on TV and how much slower it looks in the press box. There is, like, no time for anything to happen. Like, players have like no time to make a decision, and the officials, they don't get to see the replay. Like, they just have to call it in real time, whether they see it correctly or not.
I could never do that job, Jonas. I would miss everything.
Right. It's happening so fast. It would be like,
I would last one game as an official.
Well, you'd be like out of gas after like 5 minutes, like going up and down the ice.
Well, I do that at beer league, but
not at NHL pace.
Yeah. Well, trying to keep up with those guys is, I mean, can you imagine doing it with one referee the way they used to? Like, it'd just be impossible.
God, that's nuts. Anyway, I'm just saying, be kinder to the refs. It's a hard job.
All right. I think we've only answered one question. No, I don't think we even answered it. We just talked about why we weren't going to answer it.
Yeah. Sorry.
How long? That was like 10 minutes. Let's start the pot bag. Oh, Jonas, there's a lot of questions about officiating. 10 minutes of...
Leave the officials alone.
Joshua S. says, who will play the role of Nikolai Borshevsky? This might be fun. Why don't you and I, we both can pick two potential players that could step up and be the heroes of Game 7 for the Leafs. Let's go in a positive direction here.
Okay, do you want the first pick?
No, go for it.
All right, well, the obvious one is the obvious one. Should we not do the obvious one?
Well, let's take Matthews off the board. It'll be like the Gretzky rule in like hockey pools in the 90s. You can't take him.
All right. You know who I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with two guys. Number one, David Kampf. He's already scored twice in this series. He's like playing as well as he could possibly play. And here's a dark horse for you, James. He's not going to play a lot. Andre Kasha.
I thought he was good in game 6. Again, only played 8 minutes, but he looked faster. He looked like he was getting back to... He doesn't make mistakes with the puck.
I could just see like him getting an opportunity and capitalizing on it because he can score and obviously he can skate.
Yeah, I was thinking that he might score there late in game 6 and it didn't end up happening for him. So he's a guy too, if they run into an injury or something like that, you can move him up the lineup potentially. Who am I going to pick? I'm going to pick... Morgan Riley, I could see breaking through with a big goal. And I will pick, let's just say Nylander. I could see Nylander scoring.
I think that's a good one. I think he's like, he looks a lot like the guy from last year's playoffs.
He's dialed in. Yeah. And I think that if he's the difference in a game 7, all the criticism and the narrative about him is gone.
I look forward to writing that story.
Well, we've written
plenty of those stories.
We've written a lot of positive Nylander stories, and for the most part, I think we've been rewarded and proven right. You know, but every once in a while, he has a game where it's like, "Come on, Nylander! Come on, Willie!"
You know what's interesting, James? Actually, I don't know if it's that interesting, but only everybody but three players on the team has a point in this series. Is that surprising?
Well, it's 6 games. The other player I was thinking of picking was Kerfoot, just because.
Yeah, that would be quite a narrative.
I think he's due. Well, I was thinking it maybe. Like if I think he was thinking it too. Remember, he was on that. I think he was on 2-on-1 with Engvall, and he decided not to pass it.
Yeah, he passed to shoot it. Yeah, big mistake.
Well, no, there was one where he shot it when he could have passed.
Anyway. We should add, James, by the way, I meant to mention, it's obviously now in the news. Austin Matthews on Thursday nominated for the Hart Trophy, big surprise, and then on Friday nominated by his peers for the Ted Lindsay Award as the most outstanding player.
Who were the other nominees for the Lindsay? McDavid and who?
Roman Josi.
Okay, yeah, the players don't tend to put goalies there in for the Ted Lindsay.
Well, can I ask you? So I did not have Josi leading my Norris Trophy ballot, nor did I have him on my MVP top 5. You?
I did.
So you had him winning Norris?
Yes. Yes. Although it was a very, very difficult decision.
Do you want to know who I went with?
Well, Makar is... Makar.
I went with Makar. I also went with Makar third for MVP. If you look at some of the underlying stats, they just scream that he was like far and away the best defenseman, like... Not even close.
Yeah, I mean, for the Hart, I think...
Can I just ask you, who is more valuable to their team, Makar or Johnny Gaudreau, who is like another popular top 5 pick?
Yeah, no, I think it's Makar. Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that Makar is going to get Hart votes and he's going to win a bunch of Norrises. And I just looked at like the team in Nashville. There's just not a lot there. And you look at who Josi was playing with. And like,
and yet, James, Nashville had 240 goal scorers.
Yeah. I just mean like his defense partners and
yeah,
what he was able to accomplish. It was
awesome year. Awesome year. No question.
I think Yossi's underrated as a player and has been for quite some time. And so that
some maybe, of the things against him, though, James, like the defensive stuff isn't as great. He doesn't kill penalties, which is like something if you're looking at a Norris, like all around defenseman. Those are like two little teeny strikes. Like he's obviously awesome. Like he's just, there's kind of no one like him in terms of how he looks, how he skates, how he moves.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Roman Josi, but you know, I think Makar's going to win it, don't you?
No.
Who's going to, you think Yossi's going to win the Norris?
I mean, we've just seen historically that voters tend to reward the guy who gets the most points, generally.
Right. Well, and
I didn't even have him second. I had Hedman second.
Yeah, well, I think the Hedman's another good choice as well. And McAvoy, too, had such a great year. I
mean, awesome. Yeah.
I think the voters, too, also lean towards the older player when they feel like it's close, which might work, which is not fair. But, you know, there's been examples. Like, Lidstrom didn't win a Norris until he was... I want to say he was 30, which is ridiculous. Seven? Yes. Yes. And I think like Scott Niedermayer won like really, really late. And then did he win more than one? I think he won a couple. Like it's almost, they call it like a reputation win. And there's a little bit that happens.
There just isn't enough of a gap between them offensively that I can pick Josi. Anyway, Josi's a good pick. I have no problem with that.
Some people will. I assume I will take some heat for that one, but Jason wants to know, as a collective fan base, how can we appease the hockey gods to get them to stop tormenting this obviously cursed team? I didn't really buy into the curse, and then that Montreal series happened last year, and it's like, what the hell is going on?
I will just say, James, like I think I brought this up on the podcast before, there are lots of examples of teams just like the Leafs who've had just as much crazy shit happen to them. And then just something changes. Like the Milwaukee Bucks last year had this tortured history. They sucked. They sucked. They sucked. They were going to move. They suck. And then like they nearly lose in the Eastern Conference Finals. They win the Eastern Conference Finals. They get down 2-0 in the finals. And then they win the championship. And now they might win another championship. Like the Chicago Cubs, the Boston Red Sox, like the Blackhawks. Remember how bad the Blackhawks were forever? And then they win. Would they win 3 in how many years?
3-6. Yeah.
It's only a curse until it's not.
Well, it's been a pretty long curse.
It's been a long curse. Yes. 50, what is it? 50, how many years?
5. 55?
Yeah. 55 is a lot of years.
Yeah, that is. I was explaining to my son who just turned 7. I was said to him, like, you know, the game was on. I was like, oh, the Leafs haven't won the Stanley Cup in 55 years. And, you know, they got to win this one to go to the next round. And, you know, I was trying to like, so I was like, the Leafs haven't won the Stanley Cup since 13 years before Daddy was born. That's how long it's been. And he's like, oh, that's a long time.
That's like hard to even comprehend.
Well, I'm trying to explain to my kids that like, you know, like computers, we were talking about computers the other day. It's like computers didn't exist. You know, we didn't have a computer when I was a kid, you know, and the internet didn't exist. And so no one had cell phones, and like their world that they see is like, that's the way the world's been. But it's like, nope. Like, and it blows their mind. Like to think about not having the internet. Like we didn't have the internet in my house till 96. You know, I was like almost 16 years old.
Yeah. Do you remember what, like, it's funny what it was like in the beginning, the internet. Remember like the dial up noises and
yeah.
Remember like in Encarta when there was no, like internet was like very primitive, and like to do your research for stuff, you'd look in Encarta.
No one remember could that? Use the phone when you were on the internet, and like your yeah. dad would yell at you and the whole house would shake to like get off the internet.
I mean, even just like music now, how you can literally listen to anything you want anytime. And before, like you would have to like record. Remember you'd have to record stuff on a tape deck, like mm-hmm. from the radio. If there was a song you really liked.
Mixtape.
Like, unless mixtape.
Oh, well, man. And then the early days of MP3s, you had to go. I remember downloading MP3s, and it would take an hour to get each song to like.
Well, and it wasn't exactly legal, James.
No, it was not.
I remember you would get the song, and sometimes it would be like a corrupt file, or it wasn't the song.
And you waited an hour just to hear yes, "I Want You Back" song. By NSYNC.
Good times.
And then you'd have to get a CD burner and burn it onto the CD, and that would take a long time.
Now you can just have it all there all the time.
All right. Marshall wants to know, a big story early in the series was the matchup between Matthews and Marner and Point and Sorelli, how Sorelli had turned into the new Philip Deneau. He was shutting down Matthews and Marner. It was similar to last year. And I think I'm not the only one in saying I was very, very in capitals concerned. In game six, that was gone completely. There was time and space and chances for the Leafs top line. So what happened? Did Matthews hit a new level? Is Sorelli still feeling the effect from the hit from Riley in game five? Does having Tavares late in the series make some kind of difference?
I can answer that.
Yeah. What do you think happened in game six? Because that's a pretty big key.
It's a pretty big key. So Matthews played 16 minutes against Sorelli. In those 16 minutes, the Leafs generated, I think it was like 80% of the expected goals. So I think what's changed, and I wrote about that matchup, and one thing I neglected to mention is that aside from running from the matchup, which I thought made sense when you had home ice, there was every chance that if Matthews and Marner in particular could elevate, that it wouldn't matter, that they're just too good, that it didn't matter who you put in front of them. You know what I mean? Like,
well, coming into the series, that's what I would have thought. I wouldn't have thought, like, I know Sorelli's a good defensive player, but I just thought Matthews would be able to get his looks and break through.
And that's kind of what you need. Like, I mean, you go through history, all these great players face really good opponents, and you need them to kind of win them. You, like Crosby, Malkin, whoever. And that's what I think we're seeing for Matthews, and that's why I think it's so significant heading into game seven, is like, it hasn't mattered these last two games who they put in front of him. He's just like steamrolled through it.
Will would like to know, in the last podcast, you mentioned the rebound game. I heard a lot of familiar names that take part, but one that I felt was absent was William Nylander. Is he not part of the group?
He is part of the group. He does not play that game.
Nylander's just like a person who I think
he's kind funny.
He's kind of just a different cat who is he close friends with the guys on the team? I don't know.
I think so. I just know he does his own thing when practice ends. He kind of has his own routine, and it doesn't involve playing rebound from what I've seen.
I don't know that Nylander,
he kind of goes through, like, he works on his puck handling, he works on his skating, he works on his shot. Like, he just has his whole, he's out there really long. He's out there longer than most of those guys. Like, he just kind of does his own thing. Like, and that's kind of what you think of when you think of Nylander. He's just kind of his own dude. Like, he doesn't really march to anyone's beat but his own.
I don't think in the offseason I don't think that it's like he's part of like the friend group. I think
he goes back to Sweden.
Right.
He goes back to Sweden.
Yeah. But I don't think that there's like any kind of,
no.
Tavares isn't like hanging out with everybody in the offseason either. So it's, you know, it's not like on an NHL team, everyone's like best friends, but there are some really good close, you know, I think that like, there's like a really close friendship there with Marner, Matthews, Muzzin, Riley. There's a group of those guys.
I just don't think it's that weird. Like, some people you're friends with, you just don't do the same things as them at work. Like, look at me, James, like lots of the writers go for beers after the game. I don't. It's not what I do.
You're the Nylander of the Leafs reporter group.
It's just not what I do. But I like those guys. I get along with those guys and girls. Anyway,
Michael wants to say the league is rigged. Why would anyone put money into this as a fan or a gambler? People are like I said, they're very upset about the officiating. Jeff wants to know, James, can you take out your guitar and play the first few lines of The Sound of Silence? Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Great.
Look,
song.
They haven't played game seven yet, okay? So, like, I know that all the fans are right to have PTSD from what's gone on before, but let's see how it plays out. It's got to be like a 50-50 chance they win, right, Jonas?
Yeah. I mean, you'd probably even say 52-48 just having home ice. I know statistically it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah.
They lose the 2% for just the history and like...
History, so it's 50-50?
That's what I was going for. David wants to know, what's happening with the Leafs special teams play in the playoffs versus the regular season? Their PK is not as strong going against Kucherov. Kucherov's so good on the power play.
Well, their power play is awesome.
Justin Bourne had a good piece breaking down Kucherov on the power play early in the series, and it's like, just like, you don't know what he's going to do. He's like a chameleon out there. Like, he's
well, and it's like,
so
you've got
good.
Him on the one side, and then you've got Stamkos with the one-timer on the other side.
Yes.
And then you've got Point in the middle, who's just, it's a good power play.
Kucherov, you have no idea if he's going to shoot or pass or whatever.
So in the series, the Leaf power play is at 16%. The penalty kill, if you include like the shorthanded goals, the net penalty kill, it's 83.9.
Which is okay.
It's okay. It's not great. And then there's the shorthanded goals against. Is there multiple? There's at least one. Obviously, Cirelli.
Yeah, that was a hell of a play. Mattia wants to know, are the Leafs going to have a harder time starting on time with the 7 o'clock start versus the 7:30? There was another 7 o'clock start in the series. Did they win or lose that game?
They also played 7 o'clock like all year.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
people are just worried that they're not going to have a good first period. Dustin says, as an analytics fan, I've thought a lot about actual goals versus expected goals. High expected goals with low actual goals is a sign of a low skill team. High actual goals versus low expected goals is a sign of a high skill team. The bigger the sample size, the more significance. Am I oversimplifying this? No, I don't think that's like the worst rule of thumb to have with expected goals. You know, I've been tweeting about expected goals during the playoffs because, you know, like every period and every game matters. And sometimes you get some pushback on social media. And I think that what I try and say, it's like scoring chances, right? It's really just the thing that's good about expected goals versus scoring chances is the expected goals weighs in like even like the weaker shots. And it just gives them a weighting based on what level of a threat they are.
You know, it'll be great, James, when we get to a point with like the numbers and those numbers in particular, that it can evaluate based on the shooter, because that's the way it works in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of
see why they couldn't do that now. Like, why couldn't they have some sort of a formula that incorporates like a career shooting percentage for a player?
But it also bases it based on where the guy is shooting too.
No, that's what I'm saying though. Like, couldn't you take expected
goals?
Oh,
I see. So you're saying shooting percentage from certain spots on the ice and like...
Yeah, well, no. And for who the player is too, right? Like, Matthew's career shooting percentage is 17 something. And like, so if he's shooting the puck, I mean, maybe you could work it out with like quadrants on the ice and like where the players are, where Matthew shoots from based on percentiles. Like, Matthew's from in tight to the net. Like, his shooting percentage has got to be ridiculous.
Yes. I look forward to that day.
The data's going to get better. Part of my frustration with writing about the NHL in an analytical way the last few years is that we haven't had good enough information. You know,
the teams have
better information than we do. So, you know, you try and write something arguing a certain thing about a player or a team or something, and then someone with like a coach or GM or something will like text you and be like, oh, that's not right because of this. What was like, well, I don't have access to the same information as you. I
mean, yeah, you should tell them, send me your data. And
well,
then
I do sometimes.
We'll talk.
Sometimes okay, I good. Do, and they do send me some stuff, but that's almost like now it's almost like, so sometimes I find it frustrating because some of the fans look at Natural Stat Trick or Money Puck or one of these sites and they're like, oh, this is what this is. And it's like, that's what that is on that site. But I don't know. I don't know that you can just look at like a Corsi chart and just say this is the better player and this was the weaker player. And I think I obviously believe it has value, but we need some better information, better tracking that's in the public sphere. And I thought we would have had it by now. Hopefully it comes out in the next couple of years. All right, we're running low on time, Jonas.
Yes.
You need to fly home.
Yes.
Mac wants to know, who's been the biggest surprise for you of the series on both teams?
Both teams?
Well, I would say Cirelli on Tampa has been a revelation.
I would go with David Kampf. Now, obviously, he did a lot of this during the regular season, but to do it in this series against Tampa,
anyone you pick from Tampa that stands out to you?
Not really. I mean, we've seen this like with them for a couple of years now. You know who I really like watching? Not surprised by it, but I think Chernock's kind of fun to watch. Like him and Bunting have had this like war going on all series that I've just really enjoyed watching, because Chernock is like way bigger than Bunting, and Bunting is just like annoying the shit out of him every time they're on the ice.
I wonder how Tampa found Chernock, because he was an LA pick, I believe, and they They got him by trading Ben Bishop to LA as like a rental trade. So
masterful.
They gave him up for like whatever it was, 14 games of Ben Bishop that one season, if I remember correctly. So Tampa Tampa clearly identified Chernock as a prospect, as like a young player, that he was someone of significance.
And he was a second round pick.
John wants to know, what is the message Sheldon Keefe is going to deliver before the pivotal game 7, or is he going to leave the pep talk up to Spezza? You know, famously on the Amazon series, we got to see kind of the speech that Sheldon Keefe made, where, you know, now is our time and all that kind of thing. I wonder what he says this time.
I don't know what you say. I mean, I don't know that you can go big again like that, can you? Just maybe randomly, James, by the way, just to close up on Chernock. So LA takes Chernock with the 43rd pick in the 2015 draft. Guess who has the next pick? Tampa.
So
you wonder if like they wanted him and they didn't get him, and then they're like,
who did they pick? Anyone?
Someone named Matthew Spencer. So obviously 10 picks before Chernock, or actually 9 picks, the Leafs took Travis Dermott. And then, anyway. Rabbit hole. All right, James, you got one more?
I'm trying to find a good one here to close us out. This is a positive note to end on. Curtis says, game 7 at home. Keefe gets his matchups. The crowd is going to be red hot. It's hockey night in Canada. It's the perfect storm for a win, right? ... You know what? Full credit to the fans who do still believe and still are watching every game. And I'd love to see the ratings on this series. It's been a fantastic series. As a neutral, this has been the best series in the first round. I've been watching a lot of some of the other series. I haven't seen a lot of like Boston, Carolina, because it's been going on at the same time, but I've seen a lot of Calgary, Dallas, which has been a dog of a series.
Oh, Edmonton, man, so boring.
Edmonton, LA has been okay, but I've seen a lot of Pittsburgh and the Rangers, I think, maybe is the second best series of the first round.
That's been fun. Yeah. Although now it's dulled a little bit with the Crosby stuff.
Well, Crosby, it's been great to see Crosby. So, I know it's hard for Leafs fans to enjoy this as like kind of like as hockey, but like just like the viewing of this series has been, it's been great theater. The Leafs is this team that just is desperate to get over the hump and playing the Lightning. It's there's so much drama there, and maybe there will be a rivalry between the Leafs and the Lightning for years going forward after this.
Yeah, could be. Way the divisions are playoff set up. Yeah.
Corey says, predictions for Saturday. Do you say you think they do it? You know what? I'm not going to cop out. I picked Tampa in 7 at the start, so everyone right now can boo their listening device. But
you picked Tampa in 7. I think in our athletic picks, I picked Leafs in 7.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Can I check that? Is there a way to check that?
I posted them in the briefs before the series started. I had my picks and for all this different series. You would have to ask Jake Leonard, who's one of our fine editors, who put together our prediction list for all of our writers. You'd have to ask him what you picked, because he would have the data on that.
Yeah.
Or you could just like write it down before you send it in.
Actually, no, I have it here, James. Let's see how I did. So, okay. So I picked Bruins in 6. So that's going to game 7. I picked Penguins in 6. So it's getting a little dicey. Ooh, I picked the Panthers in 5. That was not a good pick. I picked the Leafs in 7, the Avalanche in 5, the Blues in 7, the Flames in 6, and the Kings in 7.
So the only picks you had different than me were you took LA and you took the Leafs. Everything else was the same.
All right. This has been fun, James.
How about 3 game 7s on Saturday, Jonas? Like, I'm going to come to the game. I'm finally feeling better, and I'm going to be there on Saturday, barring further injury. But it would be an experience as a fan just to sit there and watch three game sevens back to back to back. When I was younger, that's definitely what I would have done with my time.
Am I going to have to push you around like Hannibal Lecter or no?
We'll see. I'm going to have to find a place to stand because sitting is the hardest thing for me to do right now. So I'll find somewhere in the building to stand, find some of the standing room spots, and I'll watch from there.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting, and we will convene after Game 7 either way. We'll see how they respond. If you haven't signed up for The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. We appreciate all the support for that, for the podcast. You can't ask for a more interesting game than Game 7 against the defending champs.
Thanks, everybody.